So this is obviously a collaboration. You've had enough time to read this. So Tom Smith is a PhD student in Bristol. Oleg Vasilyev is a postdoc with Anya in Stuttgart. And Douglas Abraham is the godfather of the Ising model. Doesn't need an introduction. And I've highlighted my name only, not because I'm playing a special role, but for identification purposes, obviously. Now, the first thing that I should do is to justify why I'm giving in this program this I'm talking about this topic. So this is about a confined interface between two walls in the Ising model and this fluctuation. I don't have to explain this to this audience. And what we're looking at, and of course there's a solvation force induced between these walls due to this fluctuating interface. And what we're looking at is driving this interface out of equilibrium. And I'll explain this in detail how we're doing this. But this should have an effect on this solvation force between these two walls. Right. Now, this question is not the question that I'm going to address in this talk. I'm taking the previous step, just looking at these fluctuations between of this interface. Now, what the hell does it mean shearing the Ising model? So what we're not doing is to take the lattice and shear the whole lattice. This isn't what we're doing. And I'll explain in a minute the proper way that we're shearing the Ising model. But before I do this, I'll explain a little about the motivation why we're looking at it. So this is very much inspired by this very fine paper by the Utrecht group, Henk Lekkerkerke et al. And Joseph Indyk here. Actually, this having all this on the web is very useful. Joseph Indyk, I listened to Joseph's talk on the web, and he explained a lot about this specific soft matter system. It's a colloid polymer mixture. Phase separates. It's a sort of generic, as these authors argue. It's a generic model for a liquid-liquid interface. And in this particular paper, they looked at shear in this liquid-liquid interface, and it's very nicely written, right? The first sentence, wind blowing across a lake, is very poetic. Wind blowing across a lake causes the water surface to ripple, and this rippling works against interfacial tension and gravity. Now, they've done this in their system, and I'll show you their figure one. This is the figure one, and Joseph did a very good job at explaining these pictures. So they are from confocal microscopy, so the signal actually is fluorescent light that is emitted by the colloidal particles, and colloidal particles are fluorescently labeled. And this is a slice in a three-dimensional system, so this whole interface goes like that out of the blackboard. This is a very thin slice. This instrument can image a very thin slice in this system. And the interfacial tension in this system is very low due to the fact that the particles are so large. And this enables one to... Okay, so the colloidal particles, so this is very bright, right? So there's much fluorescent coming, which means there must be a lot of particles. Right? So this is a direct indication of the particles, and it's a two-component system. It's a colloid polymer mixture. So in the upper phase, it's a thermodynamic phase transition. In the upper phase, there's less light coming, so one infers there must be fewer particles. And actually, there's been a lot work
in this. Is the polymer melt that's separated?
Absolutely, but it's not a melt. It's a solution, really. It's a three component: the colloids, the polymers, and this is immersed in the solvent. Right, so this is generic fluid coexistence, and this whole thing is rough due to thermal excitation. And what they do here is these bright spots are not directly from the instrument, but they draw this as a sort of with some method of defining a height variable in each column, and then this bright line is sort of the interface position, the instantaneous interface position. Of course, in time this will move. Now, this is the first graph is the equilibrium. The equilibrium situation, and this they can also do movies, so this fluctuates in time. And then they switch on this whole sort of the confocal microscope images the system in a shear cell. So the shear cell, it's cone plate geometry, so you can imagine that these two plates move, and there's a velocity profile that is sort of like that. So in the upper part, it flows, the dispersion flows in the right direction, and in the lower part into the left direction. And this middle plane is stationary, so the sort of counter-rotating geometry. And what they find, again, I remind you of this first sentence, one would naively maybe expect that if the system is shear, that there's some sort of excitation going on, that sort of the, you know, like a storm on the ocean, but this isn't what they're seeing. What they're seeing is that the roughness of the interface is actually decreased. And I'm only showing this figure one. They do a quantitative analysis of this, but they see that this interfacial roughness becomes smaller on the drive. And we were very intrigued by this and thought we should do this.
What are those numbers in inverse seconds?
This is inverse seconds. This is the shear rate. So the shear rate is the gradient of the velocity force. So the velocity changes it's really imposed by the walls of the system. And you know, the velocity is meters per second, and the gradient is then. And the instrument moves like a bit slower than the hour hand on a watch. But as all the intrinsic timescales are so slow, this is actually translated into atomic units, very fast shear. So these are very high shear rates. And we're not the first to shear the Ising model, and I haven't got the time to give an exhaustive overview. I just wanted to mention these papers. Leon and Sia Cirillo did this, and recently Rosalind Allen and Dan Frankel were looking at nucleation under shear. Much of this is summarized in this paper by Schmidtmann and Sia, so we're not the first by any means to do this. Now I'll show you how we shear. Again, we're not taking the lattice and doing anything with the lattice. Okay, the motivation again for doing the Ising model is, of course, that we know a lot about, even exactly, about the interfacial properties of this model. So our model is only 2D. The real experiment is obviously three-dimensional, but we're looking at a 2D system, so x, y are the coordinates. It's between two walls. We haven't got gravity, but we put sort of fixed boundary spins that are negative on the lower wall and positive on the upper wall in order to sort of induce the interface, and it's periodic in the other direction. And we take sort of this slab geometry that Lx, which is this length, is much larger than the Ly, and actually that we try and forget about the Lx dependence. But it's confined. Ly is a finite value, such that the interface, we've got a well localized interface. Now we've got two ways of driving the system, because we somehow want to shear the system. And in our model one, this is very much sort of the direct translation of the experiment. Remember, in the experiment, they're moving the walls, and everything else happens through hydrodynamic interactions in the system. So we say, okay, we switch on a force field F. Yes, please? No? Sorry. We switch on a force field, and this force field only acts on the walls. This is somehow what happens in the real experiment, right? And this sort of it's anti-symmetric, so the F naught is the strength of this force field, and this only
What does
the
force field mean for Ising?
I mean, in the lattice language, you've got these little particles, and they move around with Kawasaki dynamics. I'll explain this in a minute. But this is the force that acts on them, so they're just dragged along this interface.
So is that a term in the Hamiltonian or imposed?
It's actually not a Hamiltonian field. It's in the Hamiltonian, but it modifies the acceptance rate of a metropolis algorithm. So the particle, I mean, if it jumps along, it's just the modified, it gains or loses this energy. It's a work term, actually. Now, this will, with anybody who's got a little experience in this thing, will immediately say, well, you're driving the system, but only at the boundaries. There's no velocity profile in the middle. It doesn't generate this. So the model 2 is aimed at generating such a velocity profile across the slit, and we're taking this function f of y, which is this force field, just as a linear, function. And I should say this is all sort of Tom Smith and Oleg Vasiliev have done a very great job at doing this with multi-spin coding and multi-threaded fancy things. No? So this is a snapshot of the whole system. It's periodic in these directions. There are wall spins, and I'll show you a little animation of it. So this is running. It's with Kawasaki dynamics. This means that in lattice language, I mean, a spin cannot just flip. It's spin exchange. So it's a pair of spins that with neighbors are exchanged. Or in lattice language, each particle moves to a neighboring lattice side. And this is done. It's not every update, but every fifth or so update. So this is why the whole movement is a bit rough and jumping around. But particle number is locally conserved.
I probably still do not understand what's happening here. Those black and white regions is just spin up and spin
That's
out.
Right, absolutely.
And the exchange, when you say that there is force, it means that all particles that can do, they can interchange positions.
Yes, that's right.
So you say that when there is a force,
only with near
to the right is bigger than to the left?
Absolutely. Yeah. And this varies across the system, right? And the effect, I mean, this force only acts in the x direction, right? So with a move that happens sort of in this vertically, there is no work being done. So all the vertical exchanges are just equilibrium.
That's just
thermal metropolis, but in the other direction, in sort of along this shear field.
Is it model 1 or model 2? Oh,
it's model 2, right? It's conserved. It's conserved order current. I mean, this is in the.
What are you asking about dynamics or?
Yeah, the force. I mean,
okay. Thanks. So it's model B.
In the animation, I think it's.
Okay, this is equilibrium, so whatever, it's zero. This is, but all the other movies are actually model 2, so with the bulk driven. So this is just a summary, I think we've discussed this.
What temperature without forces, at what temperature are you seeking here?
0.75 TC, so quite a bit below the critical point.
Below, so the reason why I see kind of division is just the boundary conditions.
That's right, yeah. It's a boundary condition, and the whole, another important thing is that the whole, there's a global constraint, which is zero magnetization. Right? And the spin flips are such that there's no magnetization can be created. And this is very much inspired. I mean, one could do this differently. And actually, Rosalind Allen and Dan Frankel are using this with Glauber dynamics, where you can just create somewhere a spin or create a particle, which is, I mean, this is a matter of taste. We want to model somehow this fluid, and their density would be a locally conserved.
So if you went close to TC, you'd see a very rough.
Yeah, then it moves. And I'll play this again just to highlight that the bulk dynamics is very fast. So if I look just at some point in bulk, this will equilibrate very quickly. But that the whole interface is a rather robust thing. This moves very, very slowly. Right? Such a bump stays there for quite a long time. And if I run this through, this bump is still there. And of course it does move, right? It changes shape a bit, but it's still there, so this is a very, very slow. Although the bulk dynamics is fast.
This aspect ratio always taken fixed?
This is 200 by 20. We've varied this. But the idea we did initially also other things, but the idea is to have a sort of to not worry too much about the lateral length, right? That this is really a confined system, and that the Ly is the relevant length.
I was just wondering if you won't have drive and on the scale L, you would the other expression of the interface with scale is square root of L.
Well, it's done in a way that the width of the interface scales with the LX. So with this, and we've actually checked this against the, I mean, for LY to infinity, there's an exact result, and the sort of what the outcome of this matches.
When you say shear, you mean that the particle flow is opposite directions up and down.
That's right.
So particle goes to the right here, and holes go to the right there.
Yeah. So if I jump back to the beginning of this, then you see the interface has moved, but it's slow. This is just a summary. I think we've discussed this already. The model one is just at the boundaries, but with this opposite direction. The model two is linear in Y. This is just a shift such that the force is zero in the middle. And this is this question about the dynamics, actually. So delta H, it's a modified metropolis. Delta H is the change in internal energy, and delta F is the additional sort of the work against this force field. And lattice gas and magnetic is, of course, interchangeable. So the sigmas are plus minus one, and the taus are occupation number zero. Now I'll show you the same thing, but under drive. So this is under drive in the model two, so on the bulk, what we call bulk drive, because this force field is non-zero everywhere. You see that the particles, sort of, if I call the white one the particles, but there's of course a symmetry. So the particles move along this direction, right? But it doesn't look like shear, right? It doesn't look like that, because the holes, right? The holes also move in that direction. But this is correct. Because if the holes move in, sort of the black spots move in that direction, it means that the current of the white particles goes in the other direction. So this is the proper, I'll play this again. This is the proper way. Again, the particle current, if I look at the current of the white things, right, goes in that direction in the upper plane, but in the lower plane, the white particles also move in the back direction against the current. It's a whole current in that direction, which means a particle current in the other direction. So this is also, you've got the visual impression that everything moves to the right. This is what your eye tells you. This is actually shear in this model. And this is for weak drive. Oops. So I'm getting confused with the... This is for weak drive. So this interface is affected, and I'm just leaving this to your own judgment. Now, of course, I'll show the proper quantitative analysis. Yes?
The volume of white and the volume of black are conserved.
They're conserved, yeah. It's the same overall volume.
Is the total length of the interface, I know that it is not really conserved, but is it approximately constant, independent of whatever you're doing here, or not?
No, that could,
that's
more could change.
Energy.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so that's an interfacial energy. Yeah.
Constant, independent of this F, or?
No, that's the question. That's what we want to find out.
But
how does the F?
I'm trying to understand, yeah, you know, when this interface becomes less wavy, so presumably it is shorter. So
that's right.
How is it compensated by the interface around those separate particles? It looks that, you know, that the total area is changing, or is it?
The force which takes the particles with it.
Magnetization increases in the phases. The profile changes.
Yeah, here the magnetization is fixed, the zero.
But there is a profile.
Yeah, if you take a particle out of the surface and put it into the bulk, the energy changes by a finite amount. So there's a trade-off between, because it has four nearest neighbors in the bulk, but only...
Fine.
Maybe
would there be a difference if you, I mean, there should be a difference if you have model one instead of this model two?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the drive only acts at the walls, and naively one could say, well, this interface, right, shouldn't feel anything about what's going on at the wall. This isn't true, that's why I call it naive. But we've done both. I've just got the movie for the model too.
Okay.
At equilibrium, we know that the game is competition between entropy and energy. Here the competition is between what and what?
That's a good question. Well, you know, because the dynamics, of course, under drive doesn't just walk through equilibrium configurations,
it's
right? So absolutely, there's a steady state. I mean,
but you are saying that actually the shear plays like energy, makes the interface more flat.
I'll come to this, because we've got, this is actually Anya's idea, we've got a way to rationalize the effect of the shear quantitatively. This is this enhanced confinement that I will come to. But before that, I'll show you that... yes, please.
I have a quick question. So at the walls, you're always moving both particles with the same force in the respective direction, or only one type of particle?
I mean, in the lattice gas, one only has one type of particles, right? If the white ones are the particles, then the black ones are just void. There's just nothing. Right? So the dynamics would move the white ones, but preferentially with an energy gain into one direction as opposed to the other.
But because black is also actually something that can be sheared.
There are different, I mean, one could view the lead, I mean, this as a binary mixture, right?
Yeah.
That the black ones are sort of oil and the white ones are water or whatever.
But I think that's really, no? But you did, okay. Then.
Yeah.
Okay,
so because there's actually, in an area like that where there's no, I mean, which is pure of one phase, there's nothing going on really. Although in the real system, if this is just a solvent or just a polymer solution, that would still be sheared. I mean, this isn't in our model. So I'll show you the current. Of course, there's a current profile. This is what your eye tells you. And this is the quantitative analysis. So it's just really counting, putting a line there and counting how many particles go through this line at a given height. This is a scaled height variable, y tilde, from minus one to one, and this range of graphs is for different strengths of the shearing field of this sort of this WY is this force field. So the shear increases from top to bottom. And of course, the equilibrium is there as a reference. In equilibrium, there's no current, right? There's diffusion, but this goes into both directions in the same way, such that the current cancels. Right? And upon increasing this variable, there's first a very sort of, this is maybe expected, linear. I mean, in the experiment, it's a linear velocity profile, disregarding subtleties that the viscosity is a bit different in the two phases. But that's a linear profile, and then increasing this, there are two things are happening for very strong. This is a very strong shear rate, right? It's two kVt per rho that is added, so this is already very strong. And there's one thing is that there's a plateau developing at both walls, and this is just an artifact, if you like, of the lattice model. Right? Even if you did the omega to infinity case, right, there would be a maximal current that can...
Can it become deterministic simply?
Well, but still the exchange between lines is still stochastic. But in the way in the x direction it's you would know that there wouldn't be any back jumping, so this stochastic element is gone, but still whether a particle would choose this direction is still, so it's not a trivial, that's what I'm saying. The omega to infinity, we thought quite a bit about this, couldn't really solve this. It's not a trivial limit.
How many points do you have on the curves?
It's 20. No, it's discrete. There are 20. Just for the answer. So this is, I think, there's a spike. 1, 2, 3. I'll come to the spikes in the end. The spikes are, of course, this is unexpected. And we had at some point a good explanation, but I'm not selling this explanation. We have got an even better.
I would expect it because close to the walls, you have very few holes. Mm. So that gives you the maximum current density of holes. It's your plateau. So when you have more fluctuations, of course, you can get a larger current.
That's right. This is our published explanation. We were very happy for this for a year or so. I mean, again, just to repeat it, I mean, Kai's argument is that at the walls, there are just very few particles, very few carriers. right? So in order to maximize the current, this is not a good thing, but close to the interface there are more carriers. Although the driving field is smaller, you could get a larger current. But I think the real explanation, I'll come to this, is a different one. Now, Anya's idea to rationalize the whole thing works as follows. This is the out of equilibrium steady state magnetization profile as a function of y, the distance across the strip, normalized by the bulk spontaneous magnetization at this temperature, that this can be represented by the equilibrium scaling function, where the height variable, I mean the distance across the strip y, is rescaled with a fit parameter. Right? So in the real equilibrium, the ly would be the real length of the strip. This is the proper scaling in the limit Lx to infinity. But she said, well, let's take this as an effective width, Ly star, and there's a bit of a correction term, and this Ly star is smaller than the real width of the strip. Right? So this is effective confinement. The driven system behaves as if it was just a smaller strip. And I'll show you. She's not happy with the way I...
Okay.
It's squeezed, yes. So does it work or not? This is the model one, where only the interface is sort of, only the interface with the wall is driven. And there's, I mean, it's a slightly crowded plot to try to put in everything, so I'll just highlight a few things. The black curve is the equilibrium. That's, again, as a function of the coordinate across the strip. It's normalized with the bulk magnetization, so it goes actually a bit above or below -1 and a bit above 1, but this is a small thing. And then this is a very broad thing, scaling with the Ly, actually. Now under, okay, and this is, I'll skip the details, this is the exact, compared to the exact solution, there's a bit of a difference because we've got this constraint of total zero magnetization, so there's this overall mode that you would have with Glauber dynamics, that the interface can be anywhere, this is switched off, right? This is why our profile from the Kawasaki dynamics, the simulation, is a bit sharper, varies a bit stronger with Y than the...
I'm sorry,
than
where does the exact come from?
This is diagonalization of the transformatrix that this woman can do in.
The whole thing.
And this for this system, and it's not shown here, but for this system, we simulated this with Glauber dynamics, and they lie on top of each other. So this is the justification for taking the LX as 200 as a large enough system. That's right. But we wanted to have some assessment whether 200 is big enough or whether we would have to have 2,000.
Correlations in the interface are very large. So we want to have, you know, one has to go pretty expanded systems to get rid of the finite sides of the connected vectors. So that was a check that exact and double they coincided. At least there is no finite side effects there, but in Kawasaki it's different.
With the boundary drive, F naught is 50, so that's actually infinity. I mean, with e to the minus 50, you never jump back, right? And this gives a sharper profile. This is sort of the effect that we observe. And this is the rescaled. The dots are the rescaled version, sort of taking this whole thing and plugging in. We've got this.
So there we go. Red dashed line is that's the actual calculation.
That's the actual calculation. That's the actual simulation data, and then we rescale this variable, right? This is this MMY as on the previous slide. Right. Just allow this as a fit parameter. Rescale, squeeze the whole profile by hand, but with one number. That's 0.83. With one number, this gets rescaled to the equilibrium.
Can you take the mean field curve and also rescale it and
No, actually not. It has a different... If I remember correctly, yeah, the shape is different. And the mean field, I mean, this is just shown as a bit of a of a joke. I like the mean field, but it doesn't have the fluctuations in it, right? It gives a much too sharp. What the mean field really tells you that there is a sort of, it's half-half, it's a 50-50 interface.
I guess the question is, how different is that curve from a hyperbolic tangent in which you've changed one variable?
It's hard to say, because even if in this calculation, the exact diagonalization, the profile is given in terms of the determinant of certain metrics. So the elements of metrics are given in analytic expression, but at the end one has to evaluate the determinant. One's to numerically. So, but it's, yeah.
One kind of believes that the profile should be like a hyperbolic tangent, except when you are close to the critical point.
But in D2, it's maybe not that so, because the fluctuations are particularly strong. Maybe in D3, probably it's better. But in D2, it's
So for the model one, again, just to remind you, this is the boundary-driven case, right? But this still has a long-range effect on the whole profile. It's not just that something tiny would happen here, and the whole profile is unchanged. In the model two, where the whole system is driven, the effect is much stronger, right? And become actually for a very strong shear rate, this looks a bit like the mean field. Solution. Again, this is equilibrium, and we can rescale. Sort of, this is weak shear. These are the yellow dots, and even this guy can be rescaled. Although this is the comment from earlier that, of course, there are very few data points, so it's not a continuous curve anymore. But this works quantitatively. Now I'll try to be quick, but I mean, I've got a lot of data to show, so I want to highlight a few things. So what we've done is to rescale, right, describe the driven system as a more strongly confined system, as a squeezed system. And what I'm doing in the following is to look at the lateral correlations along this strip, because they will be affected by this confinement. Right? If I confine the system more strongly, then also the lateral correlation length also shrinks. And that's a question whether if this effective squeezing is true, this would tell us that the driven system should have smaller correlations in the direction along the walls. Right. So in order to see whether this is true or not, looked at the spin-spin correlation function. This is the last line is the definition. So this is an object g of x, y, and y prime. So I've got two spins that are separated by an x, and they're at locations y and y prime, and this is just this expectation value. This is shorthand, I and j are these spins on the lattice. And we're just looking at the g parallel of x, which is g, this other object g of x, evaluated at the middle of the sample, right? Middle of the system, Ly half and Ly half. So this is the, you know, take two spins in the middle of the system, because they should be somehow, I could do this near a wall, but then the effect of the interface should be smaller. And as this whole thing depends on three variables, it's most interesting to look at this in the middle. Got two spins and see how they are correlated with distance. And they are correlated over long distances, right? This is a sort of 10, 20, 30, the whole system is 200. So this is this G parallel starts at 1, obviously, but that's the trivial thing, right? This is the same spin for zero distance. So this starts at 1 and decays. And again, the equilibrium is the black curve. And then there are, I mean, again, it's a crowded plot. So it's got the model 1 in it, the boundary drive. It's got the model 2, the bulk drive. It's got the rescaled versions. But let's first look at these two raw data. So this is these two lines. So indeed, under drive, the correlations decay more quickly with distance. This is what the effective confinement picture would suggest.
Anticorrelated?
They become negative. We didn't like it for a long while. We thought everything is wrong that we've done, but at some point you get used to it, because there's this, again, this is quite large. 50, the whole system is 200, and so it's quite a lot. And then Pardon?
What happens at 100?
It goes further down. And we cut it off because we think it's a bit of an artifact. And I think it's a real effect because of this conserved zero overall magnetization, right? So there will be very long modes sort of on the size of the system. And then if you're sitting here and have a plus spin, it's really if you're halfway through the system, due to the constraint of total magnetization, it will be the other way around. So I think that this is, in a way, it's a real effect, but it's also a genuine finite size effect, because if the LX would really be infinite, its decay would happen just at a later. So in a way, this is a different effect from all this more generic or important short-range behavior. And the mean field theory, I mean, I'm not going into details, but this is really like a density functional treatment, fixing one spin and minimizing the field around one spin. It has a funny, the shape is obviously rubbish, but it has a long-ranged effect in it. So if I want to word it positively, the mean field theory knows something about the capillary wave fluctuation. And again, we rescale. This is the rescaling consistent with the squeezing idea. The G parallel, we put a number there, A parallel, which should be the ratio of these correlation lengths sort of out of equilibrium and equilibrium. And we find that this is smaller than 1. And then rescaling this sort of for intermediate distances, this gives quantitative data collapse. So far, so good. I've got one more slide with data, and this is just a consistency check, because I've shown you that the driven system acts as a sort of more strongly confined system, which also means that the correlation length is decreased. Right? And now I do a further check on this, whether this is true, by a coarse graining procedure, because what they do, coarse graining is a good thing or a bad thing, depending on your point of view. But that's what they did in the experiment. Remember these bright spots? They've had a sort of column, each column attributes some height. And we can do this on the simulation data, obviously. So this is I start with the lower thing. So we've got a height variable, which is just summing up all the spins in one vertical row, sum over y, normalized by the bulk magnetization. This gives something like a local height, and this can be correlated as a function of distance. So I've got a height variable here and a height variable at an x apart, and look at the correlation. This is a C of x, and this can be written. I like this whole formula because C of x can be written as this moment over the spin-spin correlation function. So it's in a way a well-defined coarse graining procedure. There's another one by Müller and Binder that we've also done, and this gives consistent results. So this height-height correlation function is similar to the spin-spin, qualitatively similar, so it decays with distance, so that these heights become less correlated as they go further away. But the main difference is that the intercept at zero, this was trivial in the spin-spin case, right, isn't trivial. The intercept is really something like the squared width of the interface, that we could also get from the profile itself. So this tells one how localized the one-body profile is from a two-body profile. And again, the black line is the equilibrium. We've got, this is only model 2 for weak drive and for strong drive. Then we rescale the whole thing. It's nothing new. Right? It's just consistent with what I've shown before. So we rescale the equilibrium via two length scales, the A parallel that squeezes in that direction, and the A perpendicular, which sort of squeezes or rather removes the squeezing in the other direction, squared, which is this squared, essentially, and taking the same numbers as before that we got from the other analysis, and this again collapse.
Is the exponent for roughness the same as equilibrium?
That's a very good question. And if this, for the cases where the rescaling works, we got the same exponent. This is the sort of the half.
And
So our statement would be the roughness doesn't change in the cases where we can rescale, but we can't rescale for very strong drive. So we don't know whether the roughness.
Was that also the conclusion of Zia Schmidt?
Well, they say that the roughness, that it comes smooth. But they're also looking at different parameters. They've got to they don't do this because we still, I mean, that's why we've done the confinement, to have a maybe slightly better defined starting point, and then.
But exponents don't change if you just squeeze.
That's right. That's our conclusion, right? So if I want to be bold, right, I would say the for a weak drive the exponent doesn't change. But there are subtleties of how to do a thermodynamic limit, of how to remove the walls. How should I scale the field? So this, it's a non-trivial thing to conclude, to really get a roughness exponent in sort of in an infinite limit from.
And also because they were considering the uniform drive, yes, and this is a shear drive.
That's right.
The uniform drive is much easier to think about thermodynamic limit than.
I'm a little bit bothered with your definition of the current. If you would have a situation where all the points are white and you apply those sharing boundary conditions,
we don't get anything.
It would be that the current is zero, not that it is undefined, it would be just zero. That's what you're saying.
That's right. Man. So it's sort of an
your definition kind of strongly dependent on the presence of this impurity.
Yeah, but, well, there's.
If you have two impurities, the velocity will be twice larger than if you have one impurity.
No, it's one could. And actually, we've done this. You could think of, say the whole system is white. We fix it at total magnetization minus one, right? And then you could still tag a particle, right? It's white like the other ones, but I just give it, say, I call it red.
Yeah.
And then this would freely diffuse, right? And this would, it wouldn't add anything new. It would just be a free diffusion term, which we could add as a background.
But your definition, when you calculated current, you didn't count such things.
Yeah, but it's a.
You exchanged to.
That's absolutely right. Because I think what we're doing is to look at the non-trivial part of the current, and there could be a diffusive background to this, which wouldn't add anything interesting. But I agree with your comment. It's a non-trivial. Consideration of whether one should take this into account or not. And actually, all we've done movies where there's a tag particle and it diffuses around, but don't think that it's interesting. I think that our current picks up the non-trivial, really exchanges. Now let me compare this with the experimental data. This is the height correlation function, the function of shear rate. So indeed this goes down. So this is qualitatively similar. This decrease in roughness. There are also differences. Right, let me go back. Because it's two things. One is the amplitude of this whole thing, which goes down under drive, right? This is the case with the strongest shear rate. So this goes down under drive, but the second question is how quickly does it decay with distance? And this is difficult to assess from this graph, but what they find is that the correlation length for the strongly driven case is larger, that the decay of these curves, maybe with the eye you could pick it up, that this is large, the amplitude is large, but decays quickly, and there the amplitude is small, but the decay is longer ranged. And this is their graph, so the points are the data, and as a function of shear rate, they find this correlation length increasing, but we find it decreasing. So this is a nice, quite like this, it's a nice controversy, and I've used up a lot of time already. So thank you very much for your attention.
Philosophical comment. Usually, when we calculate equilibrium quantities, it really doesn't matter how we get there, because Monte Carlo is very non-realistic motion, but we know that it correctly evaluates equilibrium, because it doesn't really matter as long as it brings us to equilibrium.
Yeah.
in dynamical quantities such as shear modulus or viscosity, etc., this is not true.
Absolutely.
If you do Monte Carlo, will not usually does not reproduce. So you have something which is not very similar. At elementary level, does not resemble dynamics. It's not molecular dynamics.
I absolutely agree with this. We take some model dynamics, and we haven't got a clue how universal this is. Right? Just also, I mean, if one wanted to stick with the Monte Carlo, but just take other exchange rates, not the metropolis, but something else, and there are papers out there, say by Per Arne Rickvold, who has looked at different types of dynamics, and this will have an effect. So the question is indeed how universal is the whole study, but you know, in a way, this is the strength of this effective confinement picture. At least it gives one a way to rationalize this. Also, I should say, in the experiment, I mean, this is a complex liquid that they are shearing, so how generic this is for dynamic quantities isn't clear at all, right? You're shearing this, I mean, there are hydrodynamic interactions between the particles, the polymers will be affected by the shear flow, so there's all sorts of questions. So this is just a starting point. We haven't, you know, solved a general problem. That's not what we're claiming.
I have an even more naive question. I mean, you find at least for not too strong shear rates that you have the same scaling properties of the interface.
Right.
So, I mean, if I accept that, then you're basically telling us, and the effect of the shear is that it changes sort of the lattice constant. I mean, the num, right? I mean,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
all.
Yeah.
So, should we
maybe one
that?
I guess my interpretation of what this model is doing is that it is reducing temperature, because you're adding an additional field that refers something to something else without increasing the amount of fluctuation that
yeah.
you have.
I mean,
but they are sort of mapping it to a system that is effectively looking like equilibrium at equal temperature. So my question was the following. Suppose you were try to apply these same weights to an Ising model on a ring so that things go around and around.
As a 1D.
Yeah. My guess is that you can solve for the steady state for that in the presence of a field with a current. Then the question is whether the correlations of that look like the correlations at a lower temperature.
This is a valid question, but what is really affected here are the interfacial fluctuations. So again, the problem is how to separate. I mean, the bulk, of course, the bulk correlations are also changed by the drive.
But
how
to
disentangle them is
an equilibrium system. The interfacial correlations are set by the surface tension. You go to lower temperature, you increase surface tension of the Ising model fluctuations.
I mean,
I test. Because I could calculate the profiles for arbitrary temperatures, and we took, I mean, for the boundary, at least I did it for the boundary drive, and I tried, I took this profile, and I tried to fix the temperature of the exact solution to find the same profile, and I couldn't.
So
it's a bigger effect than changing on the temperature.
So this data, getting this data collapse, I mean, once all the graphs are polished, etc., it looks trivial. But getting the nice agreement is a highly non-trivial thing, and we couldn't get it with, as Anya discussed, with changing temperature.
For this boundary drive, the strong boundary drive, it's much stronger effect than
sure.
just changing temperature.
Anything like T larger than TC, H drive, you get
a good question.
Separate phase?
We haven't done this, but it's a good question.
This would be much more non-trivial. And this one is going to be made shape. But if they're macroscopic domains, so.
I mean, under drive, there is sort of with homogeneous drive, this is Schmidtmann and Sia, where they find sort of stripe formation even above the TC in bulk, and all sorts of things happen.
Yeah, sure.
So it's like the critical temperature is shifted a little bit above for this kind of driven system, conserved magnetization.
Which is an interesting question. You said, sort of take a system in the one phase region above TC, shear it, and it would phase separation.
In the experiment, did they look at correlations parallel and perpendicular to the shear?
Absolutely. You mean in the third direction?
No, I think on the surface, along the beam and perpendicular.
Yeah, they haven't done this. They haven't. We will be doing it. We've got a 3D. Got 3D results, and and the effect seems, I mean, there of course the scaling laws are different, etc., but the general effect seems to be there. And then, I mean, of course it's richer because there are two shear in that direction. I could look at the correlations in the other.
The experiment, they actually had the surface which had width and length in what direction, or it was a narrow system.
It's a real three-dimensional system in practice, they've got this cone plate geometry where a cone rotates, and there's a counter-rotating plate. But all this is, it's macroscopic, so the slit is very small. So locally, it's like a parallel plane.
Also, the interface is locked by the gravitational field. Yeah. In our case, by the walls.
That's the difference.